thinking about the cross enough, and not do I get enough quiet time between the bread, the juice, and then when the Arise team gets up here and leads us in another song. The issue that Paul was trying to correct echoes out of John chapter 13. They weren't serving one another. Not serving, not loving. Some were thinking more of themselves than they were of serving others. And that information can be extremely transformative if we look for ways and do those ways for others. As Holy Week begins, there is a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that I have in my office. And each year as Holy Week begins, this quote convicts me each and every single year, and I pray that it will continue to. The quote reads, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy." And the story that we have here in John chapter 13 completely echoes out of that. The controversy and the challenge that Jesus had before him. He knew the cross was coming. He had slowly been preparing his earliest followers that this is what's coming my way. You're not ready for it, but this is what's coming my way. And in this ultimate time of challenge and controversy, during Passover, Jesus does this. John chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. "It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father." And then one of the most beautiful, powerful statements in the Gospels. "Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end." The evening meal was in progress, which is where we get our "take this, drink this in remembrance of me." And the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So with all of that, with the weight of the cross, with the weight of all that he knew, he was going to the cross and he knew what Judas was about to do. Challenge and controversy. This is what Jesus does. He got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, he was still dressed, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. And then Peter objects to this scene that's going on, just like we saw last week. Whenever something intimate, whenever something powerful takes place, the disciples are the first to say, "Wait, what's going on here? This is weird. Stop it. Don't do this anymore." Peter's like, "Wait a second. You're not going to wash my feet." But then he quickly reverses course with his objection. And then the information into transformation is offered in verse 8. "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you." "Peter, you can't do this on your own. You're not strong enough. You're not smart enough. You can't obey the law enough. You can't do enough good things on your own. You can't do enough. Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." Why? Because he is greater than I. His wisdom, his ways, his pursuit, his direction, his guidance is always greater than I. Picking up in verse 12, "When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place." And then the invitation is offered. "Do you understand what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your teacher and Lord, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, servants are not greater than their master, nor are messengers greater than the one who sent them. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. The revelation of who is the one who will eventually betray Jesus unfolds. And then it leads to this mandate, which is a word that some of us, when we hear it, we're like, oh, I don't want to go back to that time. Mandate, no, no. But mandate command, this Maundy Thursday command from Jesus that echoes out of Leviticus 19:18 about not harboring vengeance or resentments towards one another, but instead love your neighbor, love one another as yourself, that identifies who you, who I, who we are as disciples of Jesus. Chapter 13, verse 34. A new command I give you. Why is it new? It's echoing Leviticus 19:18 that Jesus knew exceptionally well. Here's the new part. Love one another as I have loved you. What did Jesus just get through doing? He just got through washing their feet. Their master serving the students. Jesus says, like I've done for you, you do for one another. Mark, you can come on up here and join me. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. The challenge and the invitation here that Mark is going to pick up on in John chapter 15 is, do we love one another? Are we willing to do sacrificial things for one another? Jesus says, now that you know these things, you are what if you do them? You are blessed. Jesus says, a new command I give you. You know Leviticus 19:18 about loving one another, about not harboring vengeance or resentment towards one another. Here's a new command that I give you. As I have loved you, y'all, love one another. By this, the world will know that you are my followers, if you love one another.
Is that all y'all?
All y'all. Yeah. All y'all.
Thank you, Michael. And thank you for your invitation to come and spend some time standing up here. We have some history here in this room, don't we? It was almost 50 years ago today that I stood pretty close to this same spot and said, I do, to this Jill Drummond, and whisked her away from this place. And it feels like we've come full circle. 48 years ago, you helped send us to Belgium. 37 years ago, you invited us to return for a year with you here. And about 32 years ago, we returned to live right here. Yes, we have history. And I just want to start by saying thank you for your heart of mission. Thank you for your encouragement. This church has meant so much encouragement over the years, for which we are tremendously thankful. And our work right now with Pioneer Bible Translators, where, by the way, the slogan, the motto that we use is prayer is what it's all about. We also work with the conversation group, and what you did with us and the encouragement you continue to give us feeds into the toolbox that we use daily. And so we want to thank you for all that you have meant and still mean. And we're looking at 15, abide in the vine. This is where Jesus gives us the seventh of the I Ams. And let's just read from 15. Let's go ahead and read 1 through 8 to begin with. I am the true grapevine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch of mine that doesn't produce fruit, and he prunes the branches that do bear fruit so that they will produce even more. You have already been pruned and purified by the message I have given you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. For a branch cannot produce fruit if it is severed from the vine, and you cannot be fruitful unless you remain in me. Yes, I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who remain in me and I in them will produce much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Anyone who does not remain in me is thrown away like a useless branch and withers. Such branches are gathered into a pile to be burned. But if you remain in me and my words remain in you, you may ask whatever you want and it will be granted you. When you produce much fruit, you are truly my disciples. And this brings great glory to my Father. What a blessing to have this text. And did you notice what the command is in that John 15 section? It's not the command to bear fruit, or the command to work harder, or the command to be holier, or to be more involved. But the command is to abide, which could also be translated remain or dwell or stay joined or stand or continue in or endure or be present or cling to the vine. This life in the Son is not based on who we are, but who He is. Here we are at the seventh I Am, the seventh time Jesus makes this claim. And we are all called to do something about his claims, to respond to his claims. For example, he claims to be the bread of life, 6:35. I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry. And whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. And see, with every claim comes a promise. And invariably, with every promise comes a question. So the promise is, you'll never be hungry. You'll never be thirsty. And the question is, am I going to be satisfied with Jesus? Does he fill me enough to satisfy me? In 8:12, he says, I am the light of the world. If you follow me, you won't have to walk in darkness because you will have the light that leads to life. The promise? He is the light of the world. You don't have to walk in darkness. The question, is he keeping me from darkness? Am I following closely enough to his light that I am no longer in darkness? Or what light am I following? Or what am I distracted by? So here in 15, when he says, I am the vine, you are the branches, those who remain in me and I in them will produce much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. Anyone who does not remain in me is thrown away like a useless branch and withers. Such branches are gathered into a pile to be burned. But if you remain in me and my words remain in you, you may ask anything you want and it will be granted. Done. Promise number one. Those who remain in me and I in them will bear much fruit. So the question that I want to ask this morning, that I want us to take with us this morning is, what does it look like to abide. What does it look like to remain in Him? If you remain, if you abide, if you cling to the vine, what does that look like? How do I know if I'm abiding? How do I know if I'm staying or standing or continuing in Him, in the vine? What does that even look like? Well, He says there's going to be fruit. What does visible fruit look like? Well, on a grapevine, we know what that looks like, right? We can taste what that looks like. But what about in our lives? Does that mean more Sundays? Or more VBS? Or more Brought One buttons? Or does that mean more activity? Does that mean more friends that I brought to Easter service in the pew? Or does it mean, like Galatians 5 reminds us, that the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control? Now those things are visible, right? If I'm going to be characterized as a person of self-control, other people are going to be able to see that. It'll be obvious. So I want us to think about the simple fruit of being with, the fruit that comes from spending time with Jesus, infused with His Spirit, and what flows out of our lives with that love, joy, peace, patience. I am becoming very visible when I'm impatient. My wife will say, "You sound like you're angry." It's obvious, right? And she's calling me out on that. By the way, I'm thankful that my wife is famous and that I get to be here today because of her. I know, those of us who married up, we know, right? But I think about this being with idea, not just that I get to be with Jill, but think about what was said about the apostles in Acts 4. The members of the council were amazed that they saw the boldness of Peter and John. That's fruit, right? Boldness that flows out of these lives because these men had been with Jesus. They could see that they were ordinary men and they had no special training. But they recognized them as the men who had been with Jesus. That's fruit. So it's time with Jesus, time with the Master. John Mark Comer, in his little book, Practicing the Way, would remind us that we need to be like Jesus. Be with Jesus. Do what Jesus did. Think like Jesus. And that requires time with the Father, time in the Word. If we will listen to the invitation of Jesus, "Come away with me. Let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while." Now the question is, if I'm abiding in the vine, the question is, will I listen and will I follow? In Mark 1:35 it says, before daybreak, that's before dawn, that's when it's still dark, before daybreak, the next morning, after a very busy previous day, Jesus got up and went out to an isolated place to pray. Will I go with Him, or will I stay in my bed because I'm so tired from the previous day? So we've got to ask, where is your quiet place? Where is the place of retreat for you? Where do you go to practice the presence? Or do you say, "Nah, I don't need that. Not so much. I'm too busy to spend time with the Father. I'm too busy to abide, to remain." But remaining in the vine, keep this in mind, is not hours on Netflix or social media or taking a deep dive into politics so I can be conversant on what's happened yesterday, that doesn't help me abide in the vine. Jesus reminds us of something that he has said about himself here. He says, apart from me, you can do nothing. And I'm reminded of quotes from the high chairs at the end of our table where we heard the words, do it myself. And we have to remind ourselves that I can't do it myself. I cannot do anything on my own. If Jesus says, by myself I can do nothing, who am I to think that I could do something without him? Without him. Apart from me, you can do nothing. But, verse 7 again, if you remain in me and my words remain in you, you may ask whatever you want and it will be granted. Remember, prayer is the strategy. Prayer is what it's all about in our lives. Answered, just like that, anything. What does anything include? Whew. What have I asked for and I didn't seem to see any movement? Or what have I asked for and I thought, oh, I'm not going to bother him with that. No, that falls into the category of anything, right? It's not too much. And that means we pray with expectation of answers. Because he's promised. I want to read the words of a song of Andrew Peterson's. It's called the Sower's Song. You might wonder, well, what does that have to do with John 15? I think you'll understand. Oh God, I am furrowed like the field, torn apart, open like the dirt. And I know that to be healed, that I must be broken first. I'm aching for the yield that you will harvest from this hurt. Abide in me. Let these branches bear fruit. Abide in me, Lord, as I abide in you, so I kneel at the edge of this, at the bright edge of this garden, at the golden edge of this dawn, at the glowing edge of spring when winter's edge is gone, and I can see the color green. I can hear the sower's song. Abide in me, Lord. Let your word take root. Remove in me the branch that bears no fruit, and move in me, Lord, as I abide in you, as the rain and the snow fall down from the sky. They don't return, but they water the earth and bring forth life, giving seed to the sower, bread for the hungry. So shall the word of the Lord be with a sound like thunder and will not return. It will not return void. We shall be led in peace and go out with joy, and the hills before us will raise their voices, and the trees of the field will clap their hands as the land rejoices. And instead of the thorns now, the cypress towers. And instead of the briar, the myrtles bloom for 1,000 flowers, and it will make a name. It will make a name for our God, a sign everlasting that will never be cut off. As the earth brings forth sprouts from the seed, what is sown in the garden grows into a mighty tree. So the Lord plants justice, justice and praise to rise before the nations till the end of our days. As the rain and the snow fall down from the sky, they don't return, but they water the earth and they bring forth life, giving seed to the sower, bread for the hungry. So shall the word of the Lord be with a sound like thunder. It will not return. It will not return void. So go out with joy. And the sower leads us. What a blessing to know his claims. I am the true vine. His promise. You will bear fruit if you remain in me. His promise that if you pray, Anything you ask for, you'll receive. I just want to read one more text. And this is from the message. Well, before I do that, I'm going to go back to Philippians 1. Because this is my wish for you today. And this is where you can tell it's almost over, right? Somebody says something like that. Philippians 1, verse 9. I pray that your love will overflow more and more, and that you will keep on growing in knowledge and understanding, for I want you to understand what really matters, so that you will live, so that you may live pure and blameless lives until the day of Christ's return. May you always be filled with the fruit of your salvation. That's the fruit that's going to be visible, that some may not see, but that you know. May you always be filled with the fruit of your salvation, the righteous character produced in your life by Jesus Christ. For this will bring much glory and praise to God. Now, these words from the message, the same section that we've read earlier. I am the real vine, and my Father is the farmer. He cuts off every branch of me that doesn't bear grapes, and every branch that is grape bearing, he prunes back so it will bear even more. You are already pruned back by the message I have spoken. Live in me. Make your home in me, just as I do in you. In the same way that a branch can't bear grapes by itself, but only by being joined to the vine, you can't bear fruit unless you're joined with me. Praise God for the promises. Praise God for the claims of the Christ that carry us through the week ahead. Amen.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Arise, team. Y'all can join me up here, please. A lot of different things that we can take away with us today, especially on Holy Week. There's a lot to think through, a lot to process from. I want to pick up where Mark left off in John chapter 15, beginning in verse 8. Benny, you can go on to the next slide. Oh, verse 8, bud, go back. Boom! This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because servants do not know their master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. Be mindful, you did not choose me, just in case you want to reverse the I am greater than he. No, he chose us. I did not choose you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, and so that whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give you. This is my command. Love each other. The connecting points of John 13 and John 15 are powerful, and they can be transformative. Look for ways this week, to love one another. Love somebody in this room. Send them a text, send them an email, give them a call. Because for some of us, that may be the equivalent of washing somebody's feet. Or give somebody a hug. Because it may take a leap of faith for us to go and reach out to somebody. And say, you know what? I enjoy worshiping with you each and every single Sunday. You encourage me by being here. XOXO, and then put your name. And then just kind of leave it at that. But figure out some way. Jesus promises here, you're going to show the world you're my disciples by how you love one another. Yes, we're called to love our neighbor as ourselves. Absolutely. But so much of it, the practice of it begins when we start loving one another. Where we look past our differences. Jesus washed whose feet that Monday, Thursday? Judas's. And what did Judas do minutes later? He went to betray him. That is powerful. Look for ways to love one another. I don't think somebody beside you is going to betray you this week. But just in case they do, love them anyways. This is how you're going to show the world you're my disciples. How you love one another. Remain in me and I in you. Look for ways this week to abide in Jesus. Look for ways this week to love one another. Let's stand. As we close out our service, if you would like to receive prayers from your brothers and sisters, please come down here and see me. And after the song, we will pray together. If you're looking for a more closed, private area, we have a lady prayer warrior and we have one of our shepherds out by our prayer room. But however you need to respond, if you need prayer, or wherever you're at, if you're standing in the row and or standing in your seats and you're like, Lord, I want to name somebody. As we're singing this final song, Lord, speak somebody's name to me that I can really, truly love this week. Or Lord, I haven't been abiding in you. Help me abide in you this week. However you need to respond, please do so as we worship together.